This episode of the GSE Podcast is brought to you by Exceed Ground Support Equipment Leasing, your trusted partner for GSE solutions. We specialize in tailored operating leases for ground handlers and airlines, offering top-notch equipment and flexible terms to suit your needs. Partner with the industry leaders, we're committed to bringing you the equipment offerings that keep your operations running smoothly and efficiently. Choose Exceed for competitive rates and exceptional customer service. Visit ExceedGSE.com today and soar to new heights with Exceed Ground Support Equipment Leasing.
Hello, this is Michael Biaggi.
This is Josh Smith.
I'm Brian Yoder.
This is Justin Brennan, and you're listening to the GSE Podcast. All right, welcome to a special edition of the GSE Podcast. I'm here with Max Gosney. Recently, in November, we were at the GHI Annual Conference, the 24th GHI Annual Conference in Lisbon, and I was unable to attend. So in my stead, we had Max Gosney host a panel that we recorded live in Lisbon. So welcome, Max. How you doing?
Hello, Matt. Welcome. Welcome, listeners. Hello, everyone. The first thing I should say is that your job is 100% secure as host of this podcast. So no need to worry about that, given my performance.
I thought you did that.
The GSC panel. So regular listeners need fear not.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I thought you did a fantastic job, honestly. I just got a chance to listen to it, and I was so impressed with your hosting skills, which I, you know, shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. You've been doing, how long have you been doing these panels?
So with GHI, about 7 years now, coming up 7 years, and then previously, you know, a journalist by background, and did quite a lot of facilitation and conference seminars in my previous role, editing a manufacturing magazine. So it's where I feel at home now. So enjoy it, and you're always blessed if you can have such a great lineup of panelists from across the GSE industry, and we got that in. You know, thanks for your help putting the panel together, but we certainly got that in Lisbon. We had a glittering, you know, cast of top GSE suppliers, users. We had Jen Matsey, IEMA chair, marketing director at Aviation Ground Equipment Corp. Valentin Schmidt, group chief executive officer at TLD. So, you know, a huge name in the industry. Really interesting insight from Valentin. And we have Brad, and we all know Brad very well. Brad Compton, global sales director at Textron GSE. You work with Brad. He's been a previous guest. Great guy, knows everything there is to know about the equipment market, and he made some really telling contributions on what he saw as the future of GSC. Mark Rapucci, again, lovely guy, great guy. He's global director of GSC sales at Advanced Charging Technologies, ACT. Hard speaking Bostonian, as he self stars himself. So he has some really good vehement opinions on the direction of sustainable tech and battery technology. And you'll hear from him when we play the tape shortly. We had Owen, another great guy, Owen McKenna, commercial director, ROW at Malahan. Some really interesting insights from Owen on the panel too. And then the user perspective from Dieter Brunel, who is group director of ground operations at TUI Airline. So we had a kind of airline view, which was really interesting in the session. And it just, yeah, great to get some different perspectives on what those big hitters saw as the main themes. There was a lot of commonality around the direction of travel towards sustainable power sources, electrification, but what we do in the interim when the charging infrastructure isn't quite there, the role of hybrids, the role of hydrogen potentially as a power source. And we kind of got into as well some broader views of the technology. Has it really changed enough, the pushback in the last 40, 50 years and other GSC? Do we need to really be a lot bolder in the way we design equipment? And we heard about sexy pushback, so that's a whole new
a song or anything. That's just something that Brad Compton came up with on the spot.
That's one of Brad's deepest desires, apparently, to put sexy
deepest
back into
desires
design.
Yeah, so, that, yeah.
But it was a great point, and it's that thing of we did a lot of cross comparison with the automotive sector and the way that car makers have adapted pieces of AI technology, the design of cars, how they've changed. And it was just interesting to kind of I guess, one step removed from being so close to all of this kit, to think as actually as a layperson, has GSE kind of, you know, from the base design kind of moved forward enough, and how might it not change, and the shape of equipment change in the next decade or two decades? So I learned a lot.
Yeah, it was a perfect topic, I thought, broad enough for everybody to enjoy in talking about the future of GSE. I think everybody's really going to enjoy this episode, and just great panelists. And I appreciate everybody joining. And I obviously appreciate you taking over hosting responsibilities since I couldn't be there. So thank you so much.
The honor was all mine. And but I'd echo your thoughts on wonderful contributions to the panel. And thanks to everyone for coming on board and giving up their time to do it.
For sure. So what does GHI have in store for 2024?
We've got lots coming out, and we were absolutely thrilled with the support we got there in Lisbon. It was a record-breaking attendance for us. We had 950 delegates join the conference, which was smashed the previous record of about 835, 840. So it was phenomenal, and just shows how what rude health the aviation market is in, and the desire to get out and connect and talk about new business opportunities across the world. So we're thrilled with the support, and thank you to everyone for getting behind it. And our ambition is to kind of build on that for next year, you know, grow the event and the scope even more. We talked, I think, on the last time I came on the show about the expanded role for airports. We had some great discussions with leading airport representatives at Schiphol, at Dallas-Fort Worth, and we pioneered a new Meet the Airport Roundtable networking session where we could just sit those airport leads down with other delegates from suppliers through to handlers and airlines, just to talk about, as an airport, this is what we're doing for electric charging infrastructure. You know, what are your needs? And just connect the community up. And there's a lot of talk at the conference. You know, one of the key sentiments was how important the airport can be as a kind of conduit for a lot of the development areas. We're all talking about sustainable practice, you know, skills problems, that airport landlord has such an important position, unifying the interests of airlines and ground handlers and suppliers to expand in those areas. The airport's the kind of canvas that can bring those things together. So we're really excited with the support we got in from the airports. We just want to push on and take that momentum out to our regional events, beginning with the Asian conference in Kuala Lumpur, which is from the 5th to the 7th of March. That's our next big event. And we're hearing a lot of positivity from Asian carriers and the Asian market, which has suffered deepest and longest from the COVID disruption. Now, China's open, business is coming back, and you're just looking at the latest IATA figures, that Asia-Pacific market is huge and is outperforming all other global sectors, and kind of after such a long, protracted, difficult spell is now really reasserting itself as the most exciting growth market of them all, of all the regions for the aviation sector. So really looking forward to that event, and love to see as many of suppliers, delegates, handlers, airlines join as possible build that event, as large as we can get it. And then from there, we'll be back to the Americas. We'll be hopping over the pond to join you, Matt, for the 8th GHI Americas in Toronto, where we're going into Canada for the first time. That is towards the end of June. And we'd love to I would love to hook up with you and get you there on stage and hand over to the True Pro as the facilitator and look at some of the topics that we explored on the GSE panel in Lisbon with a lilt towards the Americas market.
I think that sounds great. Yeah, let's plan on doing a panel, and this time I can join, and we'll do it in Toronto. I'm very excited about the Toronto, conference, the Americas. It's going to be fantastic. We've never been in Canada before. And
never been in Canada.
Yeah, I think very bringing all the North American market and South American market together in an easy place to fly into, very easy to get to Toronto, and such a beautiful city. So I'm very excited about it. So thanks for bringing that to us.
No, delighted. Looking forward to it. Such an exciting event for us, the Americas Conference, and the growth it's had. And we're down at the Sheraton Centre in Toronto, so near the water, on the 25th to the 27th of June. But love to get on stage with you and, sort of expand on some of the discussion that we're going to hear about when we press the tape in a minute that happened in Lisbon.
Yeah, and the weather in Toronto in late June is going to be unbelievable. So it's going to be perfect venue. So, Again, thank you so much for getting up on stage. I know you're used to it, but hosting this podcast for me and being there and asking all the good questions that you did. And thank you again to all our panelists, because what a fantastic job that they did. And I think everybody's really going to enjoy this episode. And make sure that you stay tuned to the very end of the episode, because that's when the fireworks start really going off. So I think everybody's really going to like it.
Yeah, you can't have Brad on stage without fireworks at the end. So he delivered.
Yeah, he did. He delivered in a big way. So, well, Max, do you have anything else, or should we get everybody right into the episode?
No, I just really looking forward to doing this again in the Americas. But just say maybe to the listeners, if you hear anything you want to sort of get in touch with Matt, or you know, on topics you'd like us to go into a bit more depth on, that we'd love some audience direction engagement.
I think that's a great idea.
Just to let us know.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So listeners, if you want to reach out to Max or I, you know, we're on LinkedIn, just shoot us a direct message and tell us what you want to hear about at the Americas conference, and we'll start building a panel and we'll get the experts up there to talk about it.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I hope everybody enjoys this special episode of the GSE podcast.
We're on. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon. Welcome back to the day two afternoon sessions here in the conference room. We are launching into a panel session looking at GSE and defining the future of GSE, what it might look like, talking about power sources, talking about autonomous vehicles. And I'm delighted to welcome up a prestigious panel made up of manufacturers, equipment users, to give us their insight. This is an open panel discussion. We're going to have some questions, no presentations, hear the panel's insight, and then make it very two-way and get your submissions. Welcome to put up your hands to ask some questions or submit them on the app. Please join me in welcoming up the panel. So we have Brad Compton, who is Global Sales Director at Textron GSE. Welcome to you, Brad. A round of applause for Brad. Thank you. Please take a seat. Thank you. We have Dieter Brunil, who is Group Director of Ground Operation at TUI Airline. Welcome to you, Dieter. Thank you. We have Jennifer Mattesy, who is representing AEMA and Marketing Director at Aviation Ground Equipment Corp. Welcome to you, Jen.
Oh, thank you, Matt.
Thank you. Please join me on the stage. Take a seat. Thank you very much. We have Mark Rapucci, who is Global Director of GSE Sales at Advanced Charging Technologies, ACT. Welcome to you, Mark. Thank you. Please take a seat. Got it right this time. We have Owen McKenna, who is Commercial Director ROW at Malahan. Welcome to you, Owen. Thank you. Good to see you. Please take a seat. Please be seated. Save your legs. And we have Valentin Schmidt, who is Group Chief Executive Officer at TLD. Valentin, welcome to you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you. Great to have you on board. If you take a seat there. Just before we get underway, ladies and gentlemen, you're hearing this in the room, but delighted to say that we'll be, thanks to the support of Matt Wietzel, we are broadcasting this as a special episode of the GSE podcast. Now, if many of you have heard of the GSE podcast, regular listeners, I advise you to go and check it out. We've got some former guests here with Brad and Jen. It's a great show. Talks about the latest developments in the GSE market and some of the key characters working within GSE. So thank you to Matt for letting us do this as a special session. And don't worry, regular listeners, Matt will be back at the next episode, but you're stuck with me for today. But I wanted to get us underway with the panel by asking a strategic outlook foresight question and get you all to contribute. And it is this to begin. You hear it said in industry circles that the fundamental look and feel of GSE hasn't really changed a great deal in the past 30, 40, 50 years. My question to you is there about to be a step change in equipment design, power source, how it looks, how it appears outside the aircraft, and how different will what we see be in the immediate future? Valentin, I'll begin with you. What's your outlook for us?
Well, thanks for the question. I think it's an important question for manufacturers like us, because we need to anticipate a little bit what's going on. We see two major differences happening today in the markets. The first one is, for many, many years, the connection between the GSE and the infrastructure was the fuel. So it was very easy. As long as you had fuel, you could operate your machine on your infrastructure, and there was fuel everywhere. When you move to electric equipment or electric drive lanes, as we are doing today, the problem is to have a connection between the infrastructure that is extremely diverse. So sometimes you have electricity, you have the grid, you have chargers, you have hydrogen, you have whatever, and the GSE that is an electric drive lanes. And the future GSE will need to have the ability to adapt and to evolve to keep the connection between the electric drive lines and the infrastructure that itself is evolving all the time. So I think for us, that's the first big change on which we are working at the moment. The second one is obviously the fact that the machines are going to be more and more autonomous, more and more, I mean, safer and safer, less drivers, more electronics, more controls, more things like this. And, you know, like it or not, it's like this. So, and, you know, I strongly believe that in 10 years from now, you are not going to have a driver approaching a loader to an aircraft. It's already today. You can do it automatically. So why not?
So electrification and automation, autonomy, exactly. Big themes. Owen?
Yes, I would concur with that, obviously. You know, electrical vehicles existed 30, 40 years ago, and the market sort of pivoted towards, you know, diesel. And certainly you see the market, you know, a lot of these airlines have all signed up, airports signed up to very large sustainability, you know, targets. So sea change shift, of course, into sustainable fuels, whether it's, you know, electric, lead acid, lithium, hydrogen, etc. And certainly the whole autonomous thing, you know, probably part of the biggest challenge in Europe, Middle East, you know, Africa, US, and the recovery out of COVID has been people and the ability of, you know, as the airlines and the industry recovered very, very rapidly. Part of the biggest challenge, even us as manufacturers, it's the ability to recruit that large volume of people and competing of external industries as well. So yes, you look at the ramp, you look at pushback tractors, you know, belt conveyors, stairs, loaders, even autonomous buses, you know, is something certainly in the next 10 years I see as a massive sea change in the market, because people just by nature, certainly in the developed world, the ability to grow is going to be restricted by people. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it's going to be cash, maybe not even infrastructure. It's going to be ultimately people. So by introducing some autonomous technology, yeah, that definitely will help the industry, help the ground handlers, the airports, and ultimately the airlines. So certainly that's what I believe we will continue to see.
Thank you, Owen. Mark?
Yeah, I think it's moving beneath our feet, the whole landscape. I think our partners are relying on data. I think they're trusting data. And the partners who are bringing that, telematics. We have a lot of good partners out here that are delivering truck telematics, energy telematics. They're making decisions on sizes of fleets, on how they're doing their infrastructure, mm-hmm. on the actual data that's being received to them. So we actually have a smarter partner out there who's making decisions, not based on what they hear, but what the partners deliver to them.
Telematics, data-driven decisions, interesting stuff. Jen?
I was kind of taking it as a different approach. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
We're not just the telematics and the electrical piece of it, but the way that the equipment actually looks when mm-hmm. we look out the window, you know, and yeah. how we see it in 30 to 40 years. Is mm-hmm. it going to be that rectangular square box, or are we going to have like flying equipment, you know, that goes from one passenger boarding bridge to flying to another passenger boarding bridge? And what that looks like, is everything going to remain, you know, just wheels on the ramp? Or mm-hmm. are we looking at really progressing and being forward thinking like the rest of the technology, our car technology and that automation? Or is it just going to be, you know, the technology inside the cabin that people are driving? Is that going to be more iPhones, you know, as aircrafts are shifting from being round dials, you know, the way we used to fly with old, you know, steam gauges mm-hmm. to now we all have iPad like kind of things. So is that technology changing, and is that going to be advancing, and is that what our customers, you know, are looking for? So I kind of took it of a different approach.
No, that's great. That's great.
And you know, what else are we doing to not just stay green and sustainable, but what are we doing inside the cabin for yes. training? For safety, you know, is it kind of a bumper car look because there's so many accidents on the ramp that, you know, these ground handlers hit these fuselages? And what are we doing for our equipment in that respect to add safety, a level of safety as we continue to grow in the future with technology?
Yeah, absolutely. Because you think of it, you compare the analogy with the car, look at a car from the 1970s, very different to a car in 2023, the design, but perhaps GSE change isn't as stark. I mean, how... Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
I think Jennifer nailed it there. I mean, the ramp has always been congested, and I think that's what we're up against is the congestion on the ramp. And we're trying to find ways to help the ground handlers, help the airlines. And along with that is you've got to mention safety, like you nailed it. Safety is not a competition. Mm. But as you talk about safety, you're going to evolve the products on the ramp to help support the customers that we have from a safety standpoint. But you still have to push, you have to pull, you have to load, and you have to spray airplanes. And that is where you look at the innovation and how that's come from the 1950s to where we are now. There hasn't been a whole lot of change, but I think when you look at the electrification, which is in the driver's seat now, if you will, and that's what people are talking about, that gives you the option to really innovate and can get these products looking a little bit different. When the power chains are off of a bag tug, for instance, and you plop in a battery, that vehicle can become a little sleeker. So it's not a sexy business, but we're making some progress.
Maybe if you look at it from an innovation perspective, sometimes innovation is being driven also by the customer. And from an airline perspective, I think we need to be honest. If we were talking and looking to ground service equipment in the last years, from an airline perspective, we're looking at it having it safer and maybe more efficient so that it could bring the price down of turnarounds. So these were the elements where we were looking at. And for the rest, what type of GSE that we had around the aircraft was maybe less important. While we see now, if I speak for TUI, we will achieve a net zero emission across our operation by 2050, and that includes the supply chain. So that means that while in the past we were not really looking about to what types of GSE that we were using, we do now start to look at it. And apart from the price and different other elements, the sustainability score of a ground handler, including their GSE, is a major part of the choice that we make to choose for one or another ground handling service provider.
Absolutely. With that, and you are obviously you're pushing towards more sustainable equipment being used around the aircraft, but that brings us into the issue of infrastructure and a lot of handlers. We discussed this morning. Well, you know, it is a constant thorn in the side that infrastructure isn't there at airports right now, and there is likely to be a transition period before it comes on, if ever can come on. So I guess from the panel, what can we do to facilitate that transition through to electric? Is the future purely electric, or are there other fuel sources, hydrogen, biofuels that may play a part as well? Valentin?
So I think we have to segregate two things. You have to segregate the driveline, whether it's electric or something else, and the power source, where the electricity is coming from. I think the driveline is electric. I don't think we have any other things in the process at the moment.
Yeah.
And it works. It's good enough. It's up to the challenge. We don't have technical challenges. It's developed on every product line. I think this is behind us. As you said, the big problem now is to integrate those electric drive lines into the infrastructure. And it's this problem of which comes first. Because any customer in the world has the same problem. The infrastructure is not there. And when it's there, the machines are not there. And everybody is waiting for the other one. And we can wait for that until the ice is gone. So it's we need to do something. So we've decided that electric drive line is done, and by the end of next year, that's the only thing we're going to provide. It's electric driveline. But what we are clearly doing now is we are putting all our energy into providing bricks to bridge the infrastructure with the driveline. So how can any customer today decide to go electric and then use the bricks that they need to bridge with the infrastructure in that part of the airport? So typically, the story we are using is in a very advanced airport, I have chargers and everything. I just put batteries. Very easy. And that's what has been done for many years. Now you are on a remote stands where accessing chargers is not easy, but you have, you know, I don't know, 400 Hertz. Then you will put batteries and onboard chargers connected to a 400 Hertz and you can charge with this. Now you don't even have that. Then you put an hybrid module and you will charge with a genset. So it's kind of internal combustion, but it's still an electric driveline. And if tomorrow this airport is having green hydrogen, then you can put a fuel cell onto the machine and get the electricity from the fuel cell. But the interest of those bricks is they are interchangeable because the infrastructure is different everywhere and is changing all the time. So if today you have nothing and you put an hybrid system, if in 3 years from now electricity comes and chargers comes, you don't want to change the machine. You want to be able to take your hybrid system out. and put the battery in so you're electric. And if it's 5 years after, the airport comes and says, it has to be hydrogen, I've made the investment, I put the, you know, there is hydrogen available, then again, you don't want to change the machine. So you put the battery out and you put a fuel cell in. And it's interesting to see, if I look at the, you know, at TLD, we have 250 engineers globally for R&D. The quantity of engineers that are today focused on the bricks rather than the machines is impressive. It's on the bricks that we are putting the efforts today. It's making the connections between infrastructure and electric machines.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for that.
Hey, I was going to say, sorry, I didn't mean, I had a thought here in terms, I think the 2050s, I think that's what we're talking about 2050 a lot in this conference, and I'm not quite sure where that came from, but to go, I think the long-term prize is to go net zero. That's what everyone's goal is.
Yes.
I think we could do it, but what I was thinking is that we're not a one size fits all in terms of the territory, the airport. So we still have a lot of work to be done. We've made huge progress from the manufacturing side, and I think the airports are on board too, but it's just, I don't think it's a one size fits all. So there's a little bit of work to be done to kind of attack that 2050 goal.
So, and you would see hydrogen or other fuels?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I think electric's getting all the attention. I think hydrogen's kind of sitting in the background looking, trying to peek around the corner. That's all about infrastructures. You've got to have the airports that could load up on the hydrogen from a fuel standpoint.
Well, we saw from the guys at Universal Hydrogen yesterday, sort of interchangeable plug-and-play system.
Just like the on-road, like I think, you know, you've got the Teslas and all these electric cars, but then the hydrogen's trying to catch up. It's just where are you going to fill up that car?
Right. Apart from the hydrogen and the electric part, you also still have the SAFs, of course, which we talk a lot for aircraft, which we can also serve ground service equipment. If you look at the SAFs, I think the pros are the compatibility. You can use them in more traditional equipment, so you don't need to use the newer equipment. It comes with reduced emissions, and okay, it can be produced from renewable feedstocks or whatever. So it can make part of a it's a solution that can be part of a bigger solution as well. Of course, yeah, the availability is limited from SAFs. It comes with a significant cost, and you have the infrastructure where you need to develop. And if we then look at the others too. Yeah, with the hydrogen, it comes with zero emissions. You have the quick refueling opportunities there, which helps. Of course, you have the infrastructure challenges and the versatility. Yeah? It can be used in various types of vehicles. Although it comes with infrastructural development, like we just discussed, with energy intensity to make it. So that's sometimes an element that is being forgotten. And it comes with the storage and distribution challenges. And then, of course, the electrical power which is probably the most advanced now, comes with the zero emission and the energy efficiency, which is much better than the SAF and the hydrogen. And you also have the reduced noise pollution, which is another element around the aircraft. The cons are, of course, that the range is still limited. You need to have the charging infrastructure, and don't forget the battery manufacturing impact and what you do with the batteries after a certain period.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Valentin. Did you wish to come back?
No, it was just. I think the hydrogen is a constant. Is an interesting element, but we have to keep in mind that hydrogen is not replacing electricity. Hydrogen is just a storing of energy. So you still need an electric drive line at the end.
Okay, thank you. We've got some questions coming in from Owen. I'll take the first questions.
Going to raise a point. Obviously, the, you know, electric today probably easily, whether it's lead acid or lithium, can account for maybe 80, 90% of GSE. But you take some of the snow clearing equipment, you know, or a snow blower is a good example. Mm-hmm. You know, it's over 1,000 brake horsepower, it's blowing a ton of snow every 2 seconds. So you have to see hydrogen being a fuel source for
the heavy,
a machine of that kind or because just to achieve that goal, you know, purely via electric, you know, lithium is just not possible, you know, that so. I suppose the other thing, I read a good article at the weekend, like every 2 minutes the sun emits the same amount of electricity or consumption, human consumption in a year. So you take that power source at, you know, every 2 minutes is the equivalent of human consumption over a year. So obviously it's how you harness that power source and how how we use it, not only in aviation, but, you know, in non-aviation. So when you really think about that, or your mind processes that, you've just a huge untapped resource that we're just not using.
Okay, thank you. We've got some questions coming, so I'm going to fire these to the panel. Great one here. Why does a car have more safety technology than GSE? Why does the GSE industry lack speed on innovation? Brad.
Oh, that's loaded right there. I think we've made progress, but yeah, again, I think the ramp is a lot different than driving on highway. And I'll go back to safety. We've done a lot of work on the safety front. And again, I'll say that's not a competition. We're going to learn from each other. And I think all manufacturers have to talk about how we make the ramp safer. I think we're getting closer to that. And I think you'll see that when you shift into the cargo operations, that's more closely related in my mind to what happens on the highway. But a lot of the technology that's happened in the last 10, 15 years from electronic transmissions could get us there. So we have those creep speeds. We have wheel straightening type safety features. And all of that comes about from us working together with the customers. The majority of our customers, they own the equipment, they own the operation. That's their playground, and that's where you're going to get the feedback on what we can do to make it safer. Because it is a beehive out there, and we understand that. But yeah, I think we're going to make much more progress here in the next 10 years in terms of getting more automotive. But then it'll come back to the debate we could have over beer next is the price. You innovate. So you got to make sure that it's still within that sweet spot that the customers are going to be able to afford and continue to replace their equipment on the ramp.
Jen, did you wish to?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think autonomous is starting to help with a lot of that safety and that human element, that factor as well, where, you know, I know JBT is on the brink of doing some stuff with some of their loaders. And, you know, I know TLD has done stuff, but I think that autonomous is starting to bring in a lot of that safety aspect and taking out that human error, which is what we need. But there's also speed limits set on the ramp as well. You know, when you're driving in a vehicle, people are flying down 80, 90 miles an hour on a highway where on the ramp, it's a lot slower speeds. This equipment is not moving at that pace. It's moving a lot slower.
But I think too, it's a good point, is the speed of what customers expect for the turn. The speed of the turn becomes a problem for safety on the ramp. And I'm not a ground handler, but I assume that's could be part of the problem.
Exactly. So my thing is autonomous really is helping that safety.
No, good point. Thank you. Vantage, you wish to comment?
I mean, I concur with everything that has been said, but I think we also need to take some credits for what has been done. I mean, we are not so far from what the car industry is doing. You know, automatic approach for loaders, docking automatically aircraft, it's happening today. I mean, you have several people in that room that use it. They don't have drivers to dock an aircraft. That's a techno existing today. Line, you know, checking the that you are not getting out of the line and so on. You have customers who are doing it today, and it's available on the machines. The telemetry is controlling things, and we have dash cams on some machines to control the behavior of the people, and we report those data and we manage that in the cloud and provide it to customers. I mean, a lot of things are in the market, and if you remember that in 2012 or 2014 or something like this, the amount of electronic on the GSE was almost zero. Today, you have a baggage tractors that drive autonomously from, you know, point A to point B every day. You know, our biggest runner of a driverless vehicle is clocking 130 hours a week per machine. So it starts to be real activity, carrying goods every day. And that has been done in the course of 10 years. You know, the car industry have done that in a much longer, in a much longer race. So I think the machines were quite simple, you know, 10 years ago, but the industry has changed fast in the past few years.
There's a question linked to that, which says, IATA IGOM 2023 has a recommendation for GSE to be equipped with proximity sensors to prevent contact, obviously, with aircraft during docking. Any thoughts on this? And as you said, we do offer that capability, was the second part of the questions. But any thoughts on that stipulated in IGOM?
Well, you had the whole IATA AHM 913 came in 2018, where every piece of GSE that was approaching an aircraft or in contact with an aircraft, obviously if you were an IATA member, ground handler or airline, you had to have some type of safety controlled approach system. So we're really 5 years into that now, and nearly, I would say, 99% of customers, whether they're an IATA member or not an IATA member, they've embraced that change. They've embraced that technology, and you know, and that's fit right across stairs, loaders, you know, belt conveyors. You know, we're fitting our catering trucks, medical lifts. So I do agree. Obviously, with electric technology, makes that approach a bit easier than doing it with, you know, diesel technology and trying to control the approach. So obviously, as the market pivoted towards electric, it allowed us to introduce a lot more of that safety technology. So no, I agree with Valentine. I think, you know, the sea changes in this market over the last 7-8 years on safety and approach is, people, I think, sometimes unfairly, that come from other industries, you know, say we're way behind, but I certainly, you know, have saw a massive change in technology over the last number of years. And I see that continuing, you know, certainly around the whole autonomous piece.
Okay, thank you. Question for you, Mark. Outside of infrastructure needs and requirements, what are some of the other consideration hurdles that you believe airport authorities face when transitioning to electric GSE? We hear a lot of this.
Mm. We hear a lot of it. And one big part of it is, how many chargers do I need? Not one for one. Is it two for two? Is it two for one? And that's where the intelligence of the new partner is coming in. It's like, how do I right-size my fleet? How do I know I have X amount of equipment here? Do I need it? I'm told I need more equipment at this station, at this station. Is it being charged? Is it being plugged in? Is it broken down? The intelligence of our partners is vastly different than 3 years ago. And I'm seeing it. And they're asking questions. And they want to know, I need to have 25% over fleet size. Just in case we have peak season, we have some damage, some breakdowns. What if I have 35%? Maybe I can redeploy some of this equipment to other stations, reduce CapEx, moving to electric. That's what they all talk to me about, because it's not just the cost of the vehicle, it's the cost of ownership of the vehicle over the life. Everything breaking down. So they're looking at telemetry from the truck side, from the battery, the charger side. They want to know, they want to be told when there is a problem, not be told you're out of warranty because you didn't address a problem that you didn't know about. And that's really what they want. They don't know what they don't know, but they want to know. They just want transparency. They want someone to help them teach their team better practices.
And is that data out there on a way to capture that real time, who plugged into which charger?
Absolutely. They, you know, when it comes to a fleet, if they have a partner with a battery and a charger, and let's say sometimes the relationship doesn't work out. So if they have to remove that battery, do they have to buy a new charger? Because it's lithium. They want to understand CAN bus communication. They want something agnostic, because their job is to move people and product in turns. You're going to do it efficiently. You're going to hit your carbon neutral goals, or at least run towards them. I don't want to get down that road right now. They want to just move people and product clean. And when there's a problem, please let me know, because once again, I got to move people and product. I'm getting into the battery and charger and electric business, but I don't want to be in the battery, charger, and electric vehicle business. And the partners with the telemetry and the people all up here, that's where this whole industry is going. They're all getting younger too. As we all get older, thought I was going to live forever. They're getting younger, and they grew up on these. Everything is data-driven. Everything is data. So it's actually getting easier as these kids are coming in, and they're really sharp. Not my sons. But
the people on the podcast can only hear us. They can't see us. So we're all 25.
Yeah,
that's our story. True. We're sticking to it. Does anyone want to comment on some of the issues Mark raises there around plug-and-play technology? Valentin, I see you nodding away.
No, it's you know, we're working a lot with ACT, and it's all around those things and, you know, integrating the data. And I think today, as manufacturers, I'm not 100% happy with what we are doing. I think we are leaving far too many gaps from the customer perspective between what the machine provide, what the battery provide, what the charger provide. And it's really our job to bridge those things and make something more user friendly. Yeah. And I think that, you know, quantity of data available at ACT is very impressive. We have also our set, but it's, you know, we have customers sitting in that room who are pushing us a lot to integrate that better and provide some more, you know, something more usable, more visible. And I apologize. We've not done the job well to now, but it's on the list. We're going to work on that. But again, if I take the customer perspective, 10 years ago, all our customers had people, you know, following cables on the machines and managing some relays, and to know if it was working or not, it was easy. The relay was black. So that was pretty simple. And now in just few years, they need to program machines, troubleshoot PLCs and connect on CAN bus systems and multiples of cables, computers, and track things on their telemetry. I mean, it's, and you know, I think the ground support and the ground handling industry has faced the challenge. I mean, there is some gaps, but in 10 years, I'm not sure there's so many industries that have made so many changes in a successful way. I mean, aircrafts are flying, the security is improving. You know, we are selling 70% of our machines electric today. What's the ratio in cars? They are miles behind that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we can be proud of what has been done.
There's a question for you that's come in that asks, who do you think should finance the infrastructure costs for accessing chargers at airports? Governments, airports, ground handlers, a mix?
So who should
finance?
I don't know, not me. No, I think that's a very difficult question because it all depends on where the infrastructure is. It's a bit of a political question, so I'm not going to answer this one. What we do is we just try to have the machines adapting to what exists. Now, we also have to understand that for airports, it's very difficult because not so long ago, chargers were charging farms because we were just charging baggage tractors that can drive. So you could actually drive to the charger. Now, when you have a tow-barless tractor or loader that is electric, you are not going to drive 7 kilometers with your loader to charge and 7 kilometers back because the loaders will never come back. Mm-hmm. So now you need to charge in other areas. You need to have the power coming to the station, to the aircraft stands. I mean, a lot of the parameters of the operation have changed again in just a few years. So I think we can't expect the infrastructure to move that fast. And we always complain that airports are not changing fast enough, but I think they really do a good job because it's difficult. And it's our job to find ways that the electric machines can wait for the infrastructure to come. And that's
the transition. Yeah. Anyone else wish to comment?
No, I think, Brad. I think if you want to push the sustainability, the airport's got to be on the front end of that and help support that. We live in a industry of multiple options. And from a manufacturing standpoint, we work really close with our customers to make sure that we could provide the equipment they're requesting. And again, not one size fits all, but yeah, it goes back to infrastructure because there's so many different options. For us, no airline is the same in terms of how we build that piece of equipment. So we have multiple different batteries. We now have multiple different connectors, and that has got to get better in terms of being agnostic so that the airport could have that one-stop shop and help us get there faster.
Okay. Questions come. We've touched on automation. Question from the audience is, how are your customers thinking about GSE automation? Are they ready to deploy? Is the technology already ready for deployment at scale in live operations?
I think from an autonomous standpoint, really close. I think there's different levels to that. A lot of testing, and my personal opinion is I think it's going to launch from a cargo standpoint first. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion, but I think we're getting there. I think it's coming.
If you look in the domain of ground operations, what are our main topics that we look at? It is about safety, it is about sustainability, and it is about having the right amount of people that can work around the aircraft. So autonomous vehicles are kind of a potential solution in all of these things. What we do see if we collaborate on some test projects and these kind of things is often constraints in communication protocols where it seems to be difficult to get a one size fits all and, right. and to find the right way of dealing with it across the different parties that are involved. But from an airline perspective, I think it is absolutely the must go. And if you look, the technology in essence is there, yep. Outside our industry, but the technology is there. So it is a question of how can we translate that existing technology working into our industry.
Mark.
So I don't do anything autonomously, but I will tell you, especially in the EU, in the Middle East, every one of my partners are talking about it. This is something that is in conversations, and it's mostly the progressive countries that are moving towards the future, especially in the Middle East. Every partner I talk to discusses autonomous vehicles. From ground handling to people moving, that is a conversation that I hear all the time. So it's come. They want it.
But what is it? Do you think we're talking the talk, but how long until we walk it? You know, how long until we walk the walk? And is there going to be, is it obviously going to be a regulatory matter, an issue around safety, deployment? How will it be in phases? Valentin, you're, because obviously you're in development, you've got Easy Mile.
I think we have a bit of a continental divide that is happening those days.
Mm.
Because we talk about automation as if automation was a technology for the future. But I mean, you have airports today. And again, there is operators in that room. We recognize themselves who are operating loaders that are automatically docking aircrafts. It's not that we are discussing whether it's going to take 10 years or 5 years or whatever. We have people who are currently working at launching the retrofit plan for all their machines to have all their machine automatically docking the aircraft. So the technology is not there for all automation of everything, but for a good portion of it, it's already here. And we see some customers who are, I think we have the conversation with everyone, but the conversation can be, you know, what could happen in the future about automation. But there is a certain number of customers with whom the conversation is, what's the price? What's the lead time? When can I place the PO? But for some good portion of automation, it's already here.
So which continent do you see moving further and faster with the adoption of that automation and?
Well, I think the ADAS, so the supervision systems, the things that are doing the automatic docking of aircraft and so on, this is the more mature part of the automation. So we are already there. The driverless vehicles, the level 4 driverless vehicles, is in our business we are working on two verticals, the airports and the industry. We already have driverless vehicles without safety drivers, nothing, operating in the industry. So it's, you have several car manufacturers in Germany, in the US, in Italy, in France that are operating driverless, but they come from a world where they were using automatic forklift not so long, I mean, for a while already. So they're used to it. So they made that change pretty fast. In the airport industry, the challenge is a little bit more complex, but not that much, but a little bit more complex. You need to align some more stakeholders. So it's going to take a little bit longer. But I mean, if we talk about 25 or 26, that's the maximum. And we already made agreement with big operators to develop driverless solutions on large scale. So it's really now. I mean, it's happening now.
And here in Europe first, or Middle East?
So for airports, it's more in the US at the moment. But for industry, it's in Europe. For the automatic docking of aircraft, it's between Europe and the US, a bit Japan also.
Thank you. Jen, did you wish to comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on the autonomous, that I don't think it's one or the other. I don't think it's that they have to focus on electrification and autonomous. I think it's coincide. And I think it's, you know, people want that safety. It comes back to that safety aspect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if the autonomous is safer and it, you know, there's so much damage, there's so much research out there on how many fuselages have been damaged and how much injury and, you know, that is done by people driving these vehicles, that if autonomous can reduce that cost of, again, downtime in the airlines, you guys are to get people from point A to point B safely. And if an aircraft is down, that costs you a lot of money and very upset passengers that are displaced. So I think, you know, when we're looking at this, they're both very important to the industry. They're both very equally, you know, what the customer needs and what the customer wants. And if the customer is wanting electric autonomous, that is what the manufacturers need to deliver to move us in this industry further into our future so that we're not falling back and behind, you know, what we need to provide to you guys as our customers. So that's my opinion.
The
tolerance margin of course, for an airline towards autonomous vehicles is zero. I mean, you do not accept that you can have a hit every 3 months on your aircraft because of the autonomous vehicle. Yeah? So the tolerance margin is of course zero. And I think in the first step between you see already now remote control autonomous vehicles which is a nice step in between into full autonomous because it can improves the technology, the communication protocols, and at least you continue to have a certain way of control around it.
But I think what Jenny was mentioning is that the automation is will avoid the contact existing today. Automatic vehicles are not damaging aircraft. Yep. Safety is in fact quite significantly improving, but there is certainly a certain number of steps that we can do to make the things more accepted from the customer perspective, because it's a big change. And again, I made the parallel with the industry. If you consider a car manufacturing assembly line, when they brought the robots into the manufacturing, the car manufacturers didn't wait for the robots to replace humans. They adapted their process so that they cut the process in such a way that part of the process could be treated by robots with the existing technology, and humans were filling the gaps. Mm-hmm. And we clearly see today when we deploy driverless vehicles in the industry that they do the same. They are cutting the processes and they are making things that can be fully handled by machines, and the more complex ones are handled by humans. In the airport industry, we still have a bit of difficulty to make that, because the general mindset is people are waiting for the machine to be like for like replaced by your robots. And that's going to take a bit of time.
It's not a clean, but it's a transition.
No, you need to adapt. You need to adapt. You need to segregate flows, to dedicate certain operations.
I think both Jen and Brad have touched on how busy and frenetic the apron environment is, a lot of GSE moving around. So it'll be interesting to get the views on, is pooling and a possible answer? We've had GSE pooling at various airports. Is that part of the...
No, I think that's an absolute perfect plan. I think where you get caught up in that is going back to the specifications for each customer. And you could have pooling would work. I mean, it makes sense. And also you got to take into consideration the maintenance part of that as well. But I mean, you could have two different airlines in a room talking about a piece of equipment and making those specs match, and they will get off the table and leave because they can't figure out what light they want on top of an air start. But we can definitely get there, and I think that's a great approach to help declutter the ramp.
Is that something, Dieter, as an airline representative, I mean, is pooling part of your thinking?
It's an interesting topic, because you can even question whether it's not part of a broader discussion of having common use equipment on airports. 10 years ago, every airline had his own branded check-in. Now you see common use self-service backdrop machines, which is already common use, which is basically a little bit the same. So if pooling comes with better uses of the equipment, and of course, and comes with a better development, better investment, that will lead to a more efficient operation, everybody will benefit from it. So from that perspective, I think we can only be positive around it.
I think fleet management is a big part of that too. If you have that technology for fleet management the on these assets, it becomes a lot easier.
Mark?
Yeah, pooling is a great option, especially if you have an infrastructure problems. And we've done that with a couple of airports. And they've taken it to the next level, and it's come to the agnostic charging. They're at the point now where they're setting the charge profile for lithium ion and lead acid batteries when you bring your equipment to my airport. And you need to hit these benchmarks and this information. And the airport, through telematics, knows whose truck, whose belt loader, whose cargo loader was plugged into my charger, how long did it charge, how many kilowatt hours did it consume, and here are all your electric bills at the end of the month. So they're actually collecting the information and knows who's plugged in where. They're getting smarter. They want to know the stuff, and they're actually starting to monetize it, charging it back to the, sorry, airlines, sorry, ground handlers. Didn't mean to bring this up. That's the lever it's going. Now everyone's accountable. So they can put chargers anywhere. Anyone can plug into it. I don't care. Pool for the big wide body pushbacks. You're going to have the bigger chargers right there by the gates, but we can pool all the other stuff where all the parking size is going to be the same. Make it happen. And that's really what they're pushing to. We've got several projects done and going on right now. Mm-hmm. They're a much more educated partner, and it's really refreshing to work with.
I've been hearing a lot of praise for pooling from the panel, and a great question's just come in, which says, pooling and common use of equipment at airports, why do you think it is not so common? If we're hearing such love for it, then why hasn't it taken hold?
Well, I think a lot has to do in the current setup of how the model has been organized, with different ground handling providers foreseeing new services, and for these services they need people and equipment, where you see that due to lack of people at some points, but also due to the evolution of the technology on above the wing, you see that airports come in and provide and invest, because in terms of investment, airports have probably more funds available at some point than ground handlers. So it is, I think, a very good question towards the future model of ground handling. Are ground handlers going to provide us with a service and using equipment that will be provided by airports or others? Or are we going to continue with such a more a pooling, where they all buy their own and then combine? I think if you look at it from a theoretical point of view, the first one makes the more sense, but that is probably going to be a big change in how we set up our ground handling market. And from that perspective, I'm looking very much forward to see how that evolution goes and how the different players are going to behave themselves in this environment. So interesting to see, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that's here now.
Yeah.
And what's happened in the past, all right, we're going into XYZ station. Mr. Airport, I need some chargers. They send it to procurement and it's a race to the bottom. Here's a charger, throw it out there, you ask for a charger. With what the industry has done from a vehicle side with telemetry and what the airports are now, because everything's data driven, it's coming and it's here. Because it's old technology. I mean, if most of the charge equipment out there is 2008, the old flip phones are great in 2008. Try working with it today. Mm. And that's what's happening. They understand that type of technology. It can't work if we want to get leaner, meaner, get our turns done, and make sure the equipment's going. And it's getting forced to a point. And they're bringing it. They want to know. That's the best part. It's being driven by the airport authorities, the ground handlers, and the airlines. They want to get out of that business. Yeah. So they're going to invest in it so they don't have to worry about it.
Nice. Thank you. Question that had come in a minute ago says, do you think some GSE could be used in other services or industries in low season demand at airports?
Yeah, I think there's definitely other markets for GSE. You know, we work hard to find those other markets. The industrial market is a prime example, with car factories, car plants. So yes. Yeah, if that was, if that answers your question, we're always looking for the different market segments.
Okay, we've got sort of last 5 minutes. I mean, still time if you want to submit a question on the app. But I'd like to ask the panel, I guess each of you, to kind of sum up the innovation you are most excited by over the course of the next 5-10 years, and why.
So, innovation is going to continue on, and that's a great thing. And we work real hard on trying to introduce new products yearly, if not more than that. I think it goes back to the conversation around safety. And I think you'll see more innovation within the safety of each of our products. And I think of each product on the ramp. And I think that's going to be it. I think, you've got to make sure you introduce equipment into operations, because as we talked earlier, it's very congested. And if we continue to innovate that way and help from a safety standpoint, that's what I'm excited about.
Mark?
Absolutely. Imagine that. I like to talk.
No longer than 5 minutes.
Okay. Now I feel like I'm being yelled at by my wife. Finish. Think about it this way. The electronics market is moving at light speed beneath our feet. With that, the product has to move with it with product improvements. Because what happens to old electronics, it gets obsolete. Mm. And that's the important part. The industry leaders, the industry partners who are moving and continuing to push as that electronics, as that innovation comes in, it's here. And the industry leaders are going to introduce it, test it, launch it, and it's being accepted. Everyone is moving. Everyone is moving towards us. And the people say, I've had that thing 50 years. Good. It's going to break down, and one day you won't be able to get parts for it. And you got about a 6-month lead time to get a new one.
Mm.
Those aren't my customers.
So you have to embrace the change and get on board with the change. Yeah. Jen.
Owen's being awfully quiet over there. Okay. I'd
be interested, because you started out with saying a broader look at actually how will the technology and the equipment look? Will it be the box on wheels? Now, I mean, I'd be interested to sort of hear your thoughts on how you... Do you think it will look incredibly different in 2050?
I mean, it would be, you know, I think we in this community, we need to be thinking forward a little bit faster. You know, to Mark's point, the technology is here, but it's evolving so quickly. And unfortunately, I feel like the GSE is kind of stuck in that our equipment has looked the same for 30 or 40 years, and we aren't making it new and exciting, which is why we're kind of losing those younger generation for wanting to be a part of this industry and actually wanting to be a part of the ground handlers and drive this cool equipment and, you know, look forward to going to work every day. That our phones are faster. The airplanes, you know, they're designing things that are cooler and sleeker. And our, you know, the cars are cooler and sleeker. And our GSE equipment is not keeping up with that really cool, sleek innovation that this younger generation is seeing in movies and seeing in video games and wanting to be a part of. So I think it's a challenge for us as manufacturers that we need to be a part of that sleek look. We need to be a part of that innovation. We need to be a part of those important safety features. You know, there's a lot out there. It's more than...
What's more sexy than a big box of steel that pushes back an airplane? I totally disagree. I think it's fantastic.
There's something for everyone in this world.
There is. That's right.
Yeah. No, but I think too, I was just thinking, I think we're focusing on equipment, but I think there's a lot of good innovation on the service side. Training and service and how you approach that from a customer service standpoint. I think that's key as well, not just equipment, but how you react to the customer's need from that aspect.
Yep, absolutely. Uh-huh. So, yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the next 5 years in this industry looks like and making it cool for that next generation to really want to be a part of this and be up here on this panel as well and being excited about it just like we are in our business.
Yep. Okay. Well, I have to pick on Owen now because you kind of gave me the lead in. So, what do you think final thought?
I believe as an industry, you know, manufacturers, ground handlers, airlines, we do all push each other, you know, as an industry group. We do push each other to innovate. We've covered a lot of topics today on autonomous, alternative fuels, safety, telematics, total cost of ownership. But I definitely believe as an industry, and I can only speak among the manufacturers, we do push each other, you know, as an industry to be innovative, because you just get left behind. You see it in other industries. If you don't continue to innovate and improve and think outside the box, you do in this industry get left behind. And I've saw it so many times with other manufacturers. So I do believe collectively as a group, we collaborate on some things and we push each other on other things.
Mm-hmm. I'll drive on. Thank you. Dieter, your final...
Well, I think attracting young people towards the sexy aircraft,
the sexy pushback, yes,
is nice, but maybe not needing them is maybe also nice.
Okay, thank you. And finally, Valentin, your final thoughts on innovation, what you're most excited about?
Well, I think what is exciting for us is to imagine a not so far away future, where we'll be successful in having decarbonized the industry. So not only having electric GSE, but also electric, you know, towing, taxiing and, having made that change. And it's a challenge by itself. And I'm sure you've noticed that I'm quite excited by the development of automation. And we look forward to see an operation that is much safer, less intensive in terms of people. I agree with the fact that we need to drive more things towards training and so on. We have now training system with VR and things that is a bit more sexy for younger generations. Yeah. But, with that, we are going to make the ramp, I think, looking quite different by the end of the decade that it is today.
And working together, I think that's been a point that you've all touched upon, to drive forward quicker.
And Max, it's exciting that we're all back here. I think every part of the world's here. It's exciting to see the numbers here, and just to be together and network it's exciting as well. So it's good. Thank you.
I think they've come to see the sexy pushbacks more now.
Yes,
that's what's driven them, Brad.
Big square box.
Yeah. thank you all very much for your time this afternoon. Please give me a round of applause to the panel. Thank you all very much.
Thank you
all very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Mark. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Jim. Thank you.
I'm Gary Kemp, and you've been listening to GSE Podcast.